Good afternoon. Welcome to our March support call. Can you believe that March is already here? This is Pamela Elaine, your host for our monthly support call on preparing for divorce. To all the listeners, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us. We acknowledge your commitment to being well-informed and so honored that we are the resource for you. For those who registered with questions or comments, I have read through each one, and I thank you so much for submitting them. These calls are sponsored monthly by the Mainline Family Law Center, a divorce mediation firm that takes a holistic, integrated approach to assisting clients in navigating divorce in a healthy way. Just a little bit about me for those who are hearing me for the first time, and a reminder to those who have been on these calls with me in the past. I was married for 18 years and have been divorced for nearly 4 years. I am the mother of three teenagers and an 11-year-old. In my search for answers how to thrive, not just survive after divorce, I started a journey of personal development and healing. As a result, I started speaking and motivating women to find happiness and success after divorce. I appeared on the Dr. Oz Show to share my story and published a book called Muddy High Heels, 14 Lessons Learned from My Breakdown, Breakup, and Breakthrough. For those of you who are new to our calls, you are tuned in to an exceptional conversation between my guest and me to bring you valuable information about a specific topic related to divorce. In order to bring you the most amount of information, we do not take live questions, though we did receive your questions and comments when you registered. We will do our best to address as many of those that are related to our topic today. At the end of the call, we will let you know how you can reach out to us, follow up, and ask additional questions. Please remember again, if for any reason you get bumped off this conference line, just call back in. The title of our call today is Profiting from Divorce. Yes, that is possible. You can do that. My two guests will help you understand how you can profit from your divorce. We will take a look at profit from a financial, legal, and emotional advantage. I'd like to now introduce to you my first guest, Paul Ross. Paul Ross is the author of the book, How to Profit from Your Divorce. He has an impressive and extensive background in global corporations, including Coca-Cola, Cadbury, Schweppes, and Ferrero. A lot of sweet companies, Paul. Welcome, Paul.
Good afternoon. Thank you. Good afternoon.
My other guest is attorney Chris Pastore, co-founder of Mainline Family Law Center. Chris is an attorney mediator who brings to his practice over 20 years of valuable legal experience and perspective. He has previously represented private family law clients for many years in all phases of domestic law litigation. And may I also add in here a personal note, Chris has to be the easiest lawyer to talk to who breaks down legal facts and information in a way that makes total sense. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you, Pam, and thank you for that introduction. That's very nice, and so honored and pleasure, and such a pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm delighted to have both of you on the line with me today, and I can't wait to get to hear what you have to offer to the listeners related to profiting from your divorce. So, gentlemen, please say hello now to the listeners and tell us more about yourself, how you got into the work you do, and what drives you to help others. Paul, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, sure. Thank you very much, Pam, and once again, thank you for the invitation to talk today. The introduction you gave in terms of my background is very much a commercial background. I was married for 25 years, and in 2006 we decided to separate, mutually agreeing to separate and to start divorce procedures in 2006. We took 5 years to complete our divorce. A lot of learning, a lot of experience in that 5 years, and eventually, once we'd completed everything, breathing a huge sigh of relief, exasperated, and I thought to myself, you know, there's got to be a better way to divorce, draw a line and move on with life. And I also thought, wow, I could write a book on what we've experienced in the last 5 years. So I decided, after some thought, to write my first book, How to Profit from Your Divorce. And the motivation for writing that book were probably three areas. One was to share my experience and help the millions who are affected by divorce. I also wanted to show to family professionals, legal professionals, lawyers, the concerns and anxieties that divorcees, couples, clients have, and have a better understanding of some of those concerns and anxieties, maybe to help their do their job better. I guess thirdly is to facilitate change in some of our legislation and processes to make divorce easier, less expensive, less painful, particularly where we have children and families involved. So those three things from my experience of what was a difficult divorce really motivated me to write my first book, which was published in January, so it's still very early days, which I'm sure we'll have an opportunity to talk about in a little bit more detail.
We definitely will. Wonderful. Thank you for that, Paul. Chris,
pleasure.
Most of the listeners already know you, but for those who are new to the call, please also introduce yourself as well, the work you do, and what drives you to help others.
Sure. And I'll be brief because I know we have a lot to talk about. Pam, as you alluded to earlier, as a practicing attorney of over 20 years, and I really have had a number of variety of different experiences, both in the government and corporate and private practice areas, and I found the practice of divorce sort of midway through my career and was really hooked to the challenge of it, but also to the ability to help those folks and those families that were really at one of the lowest points in their lives, and really the drive for me to help these folks by using my knowledge, my expertise, and in the law, you know, to help achieve the best outcomes. Over time, I began to see in going to court and representing clients in private divorce that it was not so easy to be able to affect that kind of positive change and type of positive outcome for families, you know, that my clients quite frankly deserved. So then in 2007 or 2008, I believe, I found the practice of mediation, the process of mediation, and I was hooked ever since. And so I've been doing this work ever since. It is a labor of love for me, and we started our firm in 2011. We've been going strong for, we're in our sixth year now, and love what I do, and I'm helping people and touching families in ways that I was never able to do before in my other capacity. So very, very fortunate and blessed with the kind of work that I've been able to do.
Thank you. This is why I'm so excited about this call, because, Paul, you come from a client perspective, wanting to share and help others, show the legal society the anxieties of divorcing couples, and facilitate change in legislation and legislative processes to make divorce easier. And Chris, you as a lawyer share the same passion and interest, and this makes for a remarkable conversation today, I think. So thank you both again so much for being on the call with me today. So let's get right to the point here. Again, thank you, listeners, who submitted questions and comments. As I said, I read each one of them to help me frame some of the questions for Paul and Chris. Chris, I'd like for you to take the liberty to jump in at any time and offer your perspective and comments as an attorney mediator. I will address some questions to you specifically.
Absolutely.
Paul, your book is very detailed. It's backed with rich research and offers practical steps to profit from divorce. You explain financial profit and emotional profit. You introduce and then explain in great detail a business model called management buyout that you apply to divorce. Divorce management buyout, as you call it, DMBO.
Uh-huh.
In another part of your book, you talk about an emotional profit, which is discovering a relationship with your daughter that you hadn't seen before. So what I want first is for you to talk about DMBO, divorce management buyout, and your relationship with your daughter. But just before that, Paul, can we just take a step back, go 30,000 feet, and look at the big picture of profiting from divorce? And what I'd like to know from you, Paul, and if you would offer to the listeners, is what is the main point that you would like our listeners to understand first from your book before we go into the specifics?
Sure. I think the title of How to Profit from Your Divorce, the word profit is a metaphor. And it certainly relates to the finance side of divorce, and particularly the cost and controlling cost throughout the divorce process has been very important. And secondly, from a financial point of view, is once divorce is over and settlement's agreed, how to rebuild your finances and achieve stability as quickly as possible. But also profit is meant in two other areas. One is the opportunities after divorce in rebuilding your life to do things perhaps you wouldn't have considered or even dreamt of during married years. In my book, I explain some of the experiences I've had since divorce, and has given me the freedom to build a new life in new areas. And the third area, and you touched on it briefly a few moments ago, is I call it serendipity. During the divorce process, I had discovered a new relationship with my daughter, which had been hidden in our married years. And that new relationship, I believe, wouldn't have been unveiled had we not gone through the divorce process. And hopefully there's an opportunity to explain in a lot more detail a little later on that experience. And that new relationship has built and got stronger and stronger since our divorce in 2011. So to sort of qualify, to say that the word profit, it is a metaphor for the financial side, for the things you can do after divorce and the opportunities you have to rebuild your life. And in my case, finding this new relationship, this new chemistry with my daughter, which had been hidden during our married years.
Now, I'm going to come back around to you, Paul, on some of the specifics of the points you made here. I have a question for you, Chris, really quickly that came to mind. So there's certainly, it makes sense how one can profit from divorce and financially, and Paul will explain some of those details. I'm curious if one can profit from divorce from a legal perspective. Is that possible?
Well, certainly. I can speak to the work that I do in our process of mediation. Our process is a process where couples go through and they are very well and very fully informed of all legal aspects of the divorce. How does it work? How does it apply? So that they're able to make the best and most informed choices for their settlement that they're going to negotiate together. So when we remove all the veneers, of a typical contested divorce, with the the high charged emotions and going to court, and you know, your attorneys being the mouthpieces for these couples, they're not communicating. When we're in that kind of setting in mediation, the spouses together are able to focus on the legal aspects of their divorce. And I always say to the couples, you're going to learn more about the divorce law than you ever bargained for. We kind of say that with a chuckle, but because they never really thought that they would need to know this. And by the way, when they go to court, they're kind of left in the dark as far as the law, unless they ask their attorney. The attorney is just expected to drive the bus for them, you know, in a sense. So, and that's what they're paying them to do. Here, it's very much interactive, and they actually learn a lot about the law and how it works. And not so much just to achieve a better outcome, but they're armed with this knowledge that they can take with them after the divorce, too. And having that knowledge, as we've seen, actually can keep a couple out of court if a dispute comes up, because now they know how the process works. So that's how they can profit legally.
Yeah, I like that. Thank you. So Paul, let's get into the management buyout. And I would like if you could just describe what management buyout is generically and then apply it to divorce.
Yeah. Probably the simplest way to explain it, the process I've described throughout the book is a 10-point plan, 10 steps, using some of the principles of a management buyout, some of the things that I'd learned during my corporate life, and how I've applied that into the divorce process. And I'll give you a few examples to demonstrate. The first step in the divorce process is ensuring that you prepare and plan fully, and take time to put that planning and preparation together. It's very, very important. Try to establish in that time what your expectations and goals are, in a constructive way. And if you're still in discussion and conversation with your husband or your wife, is establish their expectations and goals and what is it you want to achieve through the divorce process. And also consider the options available at that stage. How would you like to progress divorce? Is it through the traditional engaging a lawyer, through mediation, through collaborative law? Really assess the choices that are available and what's the best route to go. But ensure that you have a plan to achieve that and you have control over your divorce. So I think that's a very important sort of foundation on which to start planning your divorce. But the important thing is to take time over that. Don't rush into it. It's very, very important. It also allows some of the emotional dust to settle in those first few months and to think a little bit more rationally in terms of the divorce plan, the divorce process.
In your book, let me just jump in here real quick if you don't mind, Paul. I want to say to the listeners that first step you list as divorce research. So for our listeners who are taking notes, number one is divorce research. So thank you for that description. And I want to know if you can take us through step 2, 3, and 4 rather quickly so we can get to step 5, which is the DMBO, the divorce management buyout strategy that you list as step 5 of your 10 steps.
Yeah. The second and third and fourth step really build on that foundation of planning is obviously there's cost involved, and it's important that you have the ability to pay for your divorce really without going into debt. And I explain in my book some of the areas you can actually make cost savings, how you can create maybe new income, how to budget properly to ensure that you're covering the cost of your divorce, remembering that you still have household bills to pay and the mortgage to pay and the family to feed. So you really have to find that additional money. And then really a very, very important part, which I do emphasize, again, sort of throughout the whole process, is unconditionally putting your family and children first. Mm-hmm. And making sure everybody who you are connected with and relating with during the divorce process, particularly the legal professionals, that it's important they know that your family and children are absolutely, unconditionally, non-negotiably put first. And it's really those three things.
I'm sorry, Paul. When you say to make sure that others know that family is first, do you mean to say that you let the lawyers know that you care what the outcome is for your kids, or are you putting some structure in place, some agreement in place with your partner that the children or the family come first?
I think it's both. I think it's with your partner agreeing that family and children do come first, and it's important that same message is conveyed to the legal professionals and partners that you are working with. I'll give a couple of examples. During the divorce process, there will be family events. There are birthdays, there are celebrations. In my case, sadly, my mum passed away the same year my divorce started, so we had the family funeral. And both my ex-wife and my daughter and myself clearly were there. So those important events are key that they are held with dignity and in a civil way, and you park any of the emotion that are going through in that divorce process. And it's important that you make your lawyers or your mediator or the legal professionals you're working with aware of the importance of these events. And also as well, your children's expectations. In my case, my daughter was a teenager. She had just left school and was going to university. So make them aware of the circumstances that your children and family are in. And I think communication is key to all the parties involved in the divorce process.
Let me jump in here with Chris for a second. So far, in this 10-point plan, we've got 1, divorce research, 2, free cash flow, 3, cost control, and 4, family first. Chris, in your practice, when couples come and they describe family first, how do you include that in the mediation process with them? And we'll come back to you, Paul, in a few seconds with the next step.
Sure, Pam. Well, not only do we include it, but, this concept, both spouses must be on the same page that this is the agenda or must be the agenda before we start. So way back from the initial consultation when we first meet the couple, this is one of the questions I ask, as we talk about their readiness and appropriateness for our process, because not everybody is appropriate for it, and we want to find that out up front. You know, who is and who isn't. So as, the couple comes in, I'm always asking the question up front, are you both prepared, and not just with parenting and custody decisions, but of course with financial ones as well, because one impacts the other impacts, one impacts the other, and vice versa. They're so uniquely tied that they have to be asking the question first, what is the impact on the children, okay? So, and I establish that up front before we even start any mediation, because if the agenda is anywhere else, if the agenda is, let's say, to hurt or harm one another first, financially or emotionally, well, they're in the wrong venue, and I would then end the meeting and tell them to go get lawyers, because that's eventually where it's going to end up. So to answer your question, Pam, yes, not only is it important, but it's critical, and in fact required, that they be on the same page with that concept before we go any further.
To what Chris has said, I think the importance I found is maintaining communication and a constructive relationship between myself and my wife at the time, and also as well having that constructive and clear communication with family professionals as well. So I think communication, constructive communication is key to make this process work, and having realistic goals on what you want to achieve, sensible goals between you, and agreeing that, having almost a shared common objective.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, Paul, your fifth step in this 10-step process. I'm going to go through this really quickly because I want to get to one key question that I think a lot of listeners would want to have answered. So the fifth is the divorce management buyout strategy. But underneath that are due diligence, lawyer due diligence, legal compliance, and quality financial settlement. With respect to lawyer due diligence, I know that you had a little bit of a problem with a lawyer that asked you to tell me what lesson you learned. And then, Chris, if you could jump in and just help how they do, in fact, choose the right lawyer for their needs.
Sure.
So, Paul, what did you learn?
Yeah. I think the learning is take time in selecting your lawyer. I made the mistake. My first lawyer, we had to part company after some 6 months because I wasn't happy and I'd made a complaint and I was successful in that complaint. So my learning was take time and really go through a process of almost like an interview, is interviewing maybe a short list of three lawyers, asking the relevant questions, and understanding the costs that will be involved, so there are no surprises. What am I actually paying for? Explore options in terms of cost. Could you have a fixed fee arrangement? Is it an hourly arrangement? So really understand what it is you'll be paying for. But I think thirdly and most importantly, the area you're actually the relationship. You're having to work together as a team, and do you feel comfortable working together as a team? And share your expectations as well. Well, these are my goals. This is what I hope to achieve in the divorce process. This is my plan. These are my aspirations. So share that with prospective lawyers and get their agreement. You know, test your plan with them. Is it achievable? Is it sensible? Get their opinion on it. So I think it's very important. In terms of the mistake I made, the learning from that is to go through a process, and you have to be very comfortable, completely comfortable with the legal partner, the legal team, the legal professional that you'll be working with, whether it is a lawyer or a mediator or collaborative lawyer alternative dispute resolution, you know, whoever it is you're working with, you have to be completely comfortable with that partner.
Yeah. So, Chris, all lawyers are not created equal.
Well, I think Paul did a tremendous job in kind of laying out all the concerns in terms of due diligence when you're looking for that professional, whether it be a lawyer, a mediator, a collaborative-minded lawyer, to help you. Pam, that's correct. One thing I want to emphasize, and we've heard this before, and that is, in addition to all the things that Paul mentioned in terms of due diligence, you know, by really questioning that lawyer, you know, what are their costs or fees, predictability of outcomes, what might this cost, you know, their commitment to your case, their workload, all these things that you might ask. To me, the most important thing, though, is your compatibility with that professional, whether it be the lawyer, whether it be the mediator. You have to share the same values, and I've seen cases like this really explode, you know, in a court contested setting when, you know, clients, you see this. I used to see this all the time. They would be paired up with the wrong lawyer, so to speak. When I say wrong, not that there was anything wrong with the lawyer or with them. It's just that their values were not compatible, and so these individuals end up bouncing between two or three or four different lawyers, and that's the worst thing you want to happen. That is just a time and money suck when you go to court.
Yeah.
when that happens, having to go through lawyers. The best thing is to stick with one that you know, that you're comfortable in, that most importantly you share the same values. For example, does that attorney, how do they like to practice? What is their philosophy towards practice and their style? And if it's not compatible with what you want to achieve, with your personality, because that attorney is going to be your mouthpiece. They're going to be speaking through you, and you know, you want you to be heard through that attorney, so, and not somebody else. So compatibility and sharing of values is huge in that whole equation there.
Yeah, I think I'm just going to chime in personally for a second. You know, my attorney understood my position, having been a stay-at-home mom for a number of years, having given up a career to take care of family. She understood that. So when she spoke for me, she was able to convey my heart, my needs, my desires, and put that into a settlement that, you know, turned out to be pretty darn good for me. So I agree with that. And for the listeners, it's so important that someone, as Chris is saying, that person that you are entrusting your finances and your future to gets you. I mean, just to put it that simply. Paul, we're going to have to fast forward through this because I'm looking at the time and realizing there's so much more I want to ask you. So we're going to go through to the 10th step, which really was, I think, is really juicy here, because you're inviting individuals to look beyond where they are and see a future that is possible for them. Can you just talk really briefly about that and how that worked for you? And then I've got to ask you about you and your daughter.
Yeah, absolutely. I think once we get to the stage of settlement and we can draw a line and move on with our new lives, is the next 10 years, and I call it the 10-year plan, is to use that opportunity to set new goals in what you want to achieve. And the 10-step process itself is very flexible, and it can be built and structured and bespoke to any individual, no one size fits all. So it is having an opportunity in the next 10 years to say, well, where do I want to be in 10 years? How do I get there? Again, having a plan and a strategy, and a bit like a management buyout. If you're buying a new company, you have a plan for it once you've bought it, and you want to build on that. And I think also as well that 10-year plan is recovering your finances. Clearly there's a cost for divorce, and the chances are you shared your assets. So how do you recover that? And one of my biggest objectives was to recover my pension losses. I shared my pension with my ex-spouse, my ex-wife, and I put a plan in place to invest and recover that, which I've now done. I've invested in a number of areas, the retained assets that I had, and I've now recovered that pension. So I can look forward to retirement now and having, you know, a pension that I can rely on. So those are important things. I think also as well is, I call every day a school day, is don't stop learning. There are so many opportunities for learning in new skills, whether you have existing skills yourself or you want to develop new skills. So use that opportunity to create new learning and new capabilities. And in my own case, I set up my own company after divorce. It's one of the things that I wanted to do, one of my life's ambitions, and I had to learn a whole new area of new capabilities, which I did. But the most important
things that you. Go ahead.
No, I'm just moving on to the new relationship with my daughter. But did you want to fire a question before I move into that?
I was just curious. What was one of the things that you did in your 10-year plan that you never thought that you would do while you were married?
I think it was, I took the leap of faith and moved off the corporate ladder in 2006 when we divorced and set up my own company. Now, that was a big risk, and it's something that I always wanted to do. So that's probably the biggest step that I'd made. But, you know, in married years, clearly having a salaried job and an income, supporting a family is important. You've got that security. And I guess if I was ever going to make that leap of faith, it was after divorce. I had the lifestyle, I could actually do that now, and you know, I've got no regrets. You know, wild horses wouldn't take me back to corporate life. I've no regrets at all, and it's brought, you know, a lot of satisfaction a lot of positive things. Taking the leap into setting your own company was probably the biggest risk, but probably the most rewarding thing that I did since we divorced.
That's amazing. And then for your daughter, you mentioned that that relationship had been hidden, and I'm sure you didn't mean that it was hidden by your ex-spouse. It was hidden in what way?
Well, I think, you know, the responsibility was mine. During married life, my career took me away from home an awful lot, so I missed a lot of time with my daughter growing up. We had a great relationship, but I'd missed a lot of time with my daughter growing up through not being at home, which, if I'm honest, was probably part of the contribution towards us having divorced. But I think during the time of divorce, my daughter had left school. She had gone to university. I started to build that time with her to really understand what it was she wanted to do once she'd graduated from university. What were her career plans? And how could I help her? I found with teenagers, mm-hmm. it's best to ask them what they want to do in life and help them get there. So that was really a platform for finding new areas of interest, I guess, mm-hmm. And new experiences. And I used to listen to her experiences and what she'd been doing and what she wanted to achieve in the future, and really working together as a team to achieve that. And that unfolded a whole new area of common interest, of common goals, what we both wanted to do, sharing our plans. And with that, it really had sort of moved us into a new stage of relationship, which is built since then. Mm-hmm. Once she had finished her university, we gave her the choice of where she wanted to, who she wanted to live with, her mum or her dad, and she decided to live with me, which I guess mm-hmm. selfishly gave us more time again to sort of build on that relationship. So having that time now has not only given us areas to discover new interests, but probably a new DNA, a new chemistry has been achieved. And probably as she's more matured into her adult years, we've found a lot more common interest as she's moved into her late teens and now early 20s. You know, we've actually found that new area of match of chemistry with each other, and she's now actually got married and setting up her own home and hopefully starting a family this year as well. So I'm hoping those values will continue.
That's wonderful. What I'm getting from this is that the prophet is not only self-discovery, who you can become and what you can discover about yourself, your gifts, your talents, your interests, but the discovery of a new relationship that never existed before that you can have, with whether it's with your children or whether it's with your parents or with whomever. The divorce does have many layers of profit here, and I'm so delighted that you were able to share some concepts from your book about that. All right, well, gentlemen, listen up. It's time to go rogue, and because of the time, I'm going to only be able to make two statements that are just completely controversial and have you all answer them and give your brief response to them. Paul, I'm going to have you go first, okay? Here's okay. My going rogue statement.
Right,
men
I'm ready.
Are you ready?
Sure.
Men are financial bullies. They know more about money and assets than women and use that knowledge to intimidate them during divorce.
Right. thanks for that one. We call that a curved ball. I think where there is evidence of this taking place, this is where legal professionals need to guide and give advice if any side, whether it's the man or the female in divorce that are acting in this way. So it's important to take advice. But when you say specifically, it's the male gender that is guilty of this. You know what? I know a lot of very savvy, very knowledgeable women who are very capable of managing their finances. So I think there is a balance there. And it always reminds me of Zaza Gabor, who I think was married and divorced 9 times, so she's pretty well experienced in this area. And she was known as a good housekeeper because she always got to keep the house. So I think it's an example there of somebody who's on the female side, female gender, that was very savvy and very smart in her divorce experiences. So I think it's pretty equal.
Okay, that was a good answer. Chris, are you ready?
As I'll ever be, yes.
All right, Chris, here it goes. Chris, mediation is not, it is not a legitimate binding agreement because couples still have to go to court for approval.
Well, Pam, that not only is that a rogue statement, but the complete opposite is true. So if they participate in a mediation process that is done in the right way, that's handled with the right professionals, that are going to ensure that they have a fully legally binding marital settlement agreement in the end that reflects what they want, reflects their own terms outside of court, and then filed and incorporated with the divorce filing, they're absolutely going to have a fully legally binding contract, which then becomes an order of court once the judge signs a decree. Now, the nice thing about a mediated settlement is that couples, as they've learned through the process to resolve things that come up, they've actually learned that skill, that they're able to actually mediate after the divorce as changes come up, maybe as disputes might come up, to be able to modify their own existing agreement without having to go to court. And they do not ever have to go to court to change anything. They can do all that on their own. So, whereas if they were in court and they got a court-ordered settlement, they'd have to go back to court and file petitions to modify any time they wanted to change the agreement. So in mediation, in theory, they never have to do that at all.
Mm. Very nice answer. Thank you for that, Chris. Thank you, Paul.
Sure.
So now let's go into our next to final segment, which is, did you know? And so, Paul and Chris, I'm going to ask you each to just offer one secret or relevant resource or interesting bit of knowledge that most of us don't know about and we can benefit from. So, Paul, why don't you start with did you know and complete that for our listeners?
This part of the research for my book, I visited Russia in 2015, and Russia has the highest divorce rate in the world, and I was curious on that trip there to find out why that was the case. I won't elaborate too much on what I discovered. You can read it in my book. What we saw there was economic pressures, maybe 2 or 3 generations living in one small apartment. Alcoholism is a major contributor to the high divorce rate. But also as well, what I discovered is the dangers of online dating. I was discovering a Russian online dating offer from a young lady called Veronica, who claimed to want to find her new love outside the country. And actually what I did discover, she was just after my credit card details, and the alarm bells were sounding very, very quickly. So my learning from that is if something looks too good to be true online, it usually is. So just be very, very careful.
Thank you. Thank you for that. That's important. Chris, did you know? What do you have to offer?
Yeah. So did you know that a divorcing couple in Pennsylvania, when they reach an out-of-court, uncontested settlement, let's say through the mediation process or on their own or through a collaborative process, can file their divorce in any county in Pennsylvania that they both agree, so not just the county where they reside? There's a lot of confusion over this, but the Pennsylvania venue provision actually allows you to file in any county in Pennsylvania. And this is, we utilize this in our mediation all the time, because in most cases, couples are looking for efficiency and they want to move through as quickly as they can. So if they're residing in Philadelphia, for example, You may imagine that it can be a bit of a challenge to get a divorce decree there. We used to help clients file there, and so that we could have a mediated settlement in a matter of months, but then take 2.5 years to get a divorce decree because of the way the system is designed down there. So now we just take them in another county, and we're able to then maximize the efficiency in which they get through the program and they can get their divorce.
Wow, that's very helpful. Save a lot of time, save a lot of money.
Yep.
Thank you both, Paul and Chris, for those Did You Know. Finally, Paul, I understand you have an offer for one of the listeners, and I think you're willing to give away your book to one lucky listener, and we will draw that listener's name out of a quote-unquote hat and then let that listener know that he or she has won the book, How to Profit from Your Divorce. So thank you, Paul, for that generous offer.
Pleasure. Yeah, my pleasure.
All right, let's wrap this up. It's time to say goodbye. Can you believe that? It's time to say goodbye. Paul, Chris, do you have any final thoughts, points of clarification, or information for our listeners, including how to contact you?
My book is now available through all the major online retailers. It's published in January. And just to say that part of the proceeds from my book will be made to the Alzheimer's research. It's one of the legacies that I want to leave. So just to make everybody aware that the book is available and there is a part of the proceeds and contribution to the good cause of Alzheimer's research.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much for that. Chris, any last thought? You have 30 seconds.
29, 28. I want to commend everybody that's on this call. The very fact that you are on this call shows that you do care about yourself and your family, and self-care is absolutely critical as you go through or think about going through a process like this. If I can ever answer any questions at any time, please feel free to call our office at 610-764-7144 or visit us on the web. It has is a rich source of information, www.myhealthydivorce.com. So thank you all for being here. And you, Pam, and Paul.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
And Paul's website is, for the listeners, Paul's website is paul-ross.com. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Chris. Mainline Family Law Center can be reached via their website as Chris offered, myhealthydivorce.com. Spend time on their website because it is full of useful information you may not know exists that can help you tremendously. I can be reached via my website, yourresiliencecoach.com. Please join us again next month for another insightful conversation to help you achieve a healthy divorce. Our topic will be about how the media and entertainment can make divorce healthier. My guest will be James Brown, host of Divorce, the Talk Show. Be sure to check myhealthydivorce.com for those upcoming details. Until then, remember, you can have a healthy divorce. It's how you divorce that matters. Take care, everyone. See you next time.